No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. And this is the 100th episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is the all-Cardinals show, as the Arizona Cardinals finished off Sunday night with a great victory. A 34-31 thriller on Sunday Night Football over the Cincinnati Bengals, improving their record to 8-2 on the year. Placing them securely, for the moment, in as the second seed in the NFC. And they did so with a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, and then a little bit of perhaps lucky, if you want to call it that. But we're talking all Cardinals tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, as we tend to do. So I got Seth Cox on the line. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
Good, just getting ready for the holiday rush.
And that is a rush it will be. By the time you listen to this, you'll probably be way busy with getting ready for Thanksgiving and the food and the turkey and the shopping, which is every bit part of the experience there and anymore. And then some football. But the Cardinals now sit at 8-2. And tell me, Seth, how does it feel to be a Cardinals fan this right now after this weekend?
It's enjoyable because you're finally seeing the fruits of the past 2 years' labor. So it's enjoyable. It's different, obviously, than anything we've, as Cardinals fans, ever experienced before. Even in the Warner years, I mean, they weren't, a top seven team in the NFL all year. Like, there were still the fluid ups and downs of that team. So it's enjoyable to sit back and watch this team and know that every game they should win. I think that's just a different experience than anything we've done, or anything we've had all year or all our lives.
And what the greatest part about this game, because yes, this is the most excited I've been with the Cardinals team this late in the season. Now, obviously, last year there was a lot of excitement, but it was in game 10 when Carson Palmer went down, and so there was a lot of uncertainty moving forward. And it's good to be in a position now. This is, I think, probably you have to say this is probably the best Cardinals team overall that we've ever seen. No, it's not Kurt Warner. No, we haven't made the Super Bowl yet. But you have to look at everything across the board. And you got, wow, this is the most talented, the best team we've ever seen in Arizona. And it was a satisfying win. And really, aside for a couple of hiccups, the season's been extremely satisfying because even in the game on Sunday, they played, you could say played poorly to start things out, but then they catch fire. This is a fun team to watch because they throw the ball down the field. They put up lots of points. As I noted in a post on for RevengeOfTheBirds.com, it's a lot of this were notes that were released by the team, but they put up 39 points on the number two scoring defense in the league entering week 9. And they put up 34 on the league's number one scoring defense, which just leads to believe is the Cardinals are, not messing themselves up. If they're playing the way they want to play, they can score on anybody.
Yeah, they're the best offense in the NFL. And that's something I talked about in text message with some people, and I think you and I have talked about it off the air, and that's everybody, and not to take it away anything that Carson Palmer's done, because he's been stupid good, but this team, like, even when you put them up against New England or Carolina or even Green Bay, when you look at this team in the offense that has been built, how many guys on other teams, like those, you know, those other three top teams, you know, start for the Cardinals? Gronk, maybe. You know, and so when you look at, well, not Gronk, maybe, obviously Gronk, but then, you know, you go from there and you're like, I mean, who else starts for the Patriots on the Cardinals outside of Tom Brady? No one, really. I mean, maybe a healthy Julian Edelman, but probably not an Arians offense, right?
Right.
And so when you look at it, the team that's as close, if not maybe a little better, talent-wise, they just beat on Sunday night in Cincinnati. The difference is, and everybody, you know, noticed it, I think, in the game, the Cardinals quarterback can make throws that the Bengals quarterback can't, and that is what the difference was in that game. It wasn't that Andy Dalton was bad, because he wasn't. It's just that Carson Palmer can do things that Andy so maybe, you know, maybe pound for pound, the Bengals, you know, you stack up the Bengals and the Cardinals, and you go, okay, the Bengals have an advantage here, here, and here. But at the most important position, the Cardinals have an advantage. So that's why when you look at this Cardinals team and what they're doing, I think it's surprising in the sense that it's finally come to fruition. But when we just look at it overall, it really shouldn't be surprising because they've invested heavily to make sure that this offense was Carson Palmer proof, if you will. And I think we saw exactly that on Sunday. He came out, he made two really boneheaded mistakes, and this offense is so good.
It didn't even matter.
It was like they didn't even happen. I mean, they still put up, what was it, 34? I can't even remember.
Yeah, 34 points.
Yeah, so they still put up 34 points on a team that hadn't given up, or had given up, I think, 30 total in the last three games. So this team, that's what I'm saying, like, as great as Carson Palmer has been, this team around him is so special that he almost has to be awful, like beyond awful, for it not to compete. And when he's able to get back into a groove like he did on Sunday night, they're literally unstoppable.
And this is looking like, but even a different, this looks like the 2006 to 2009 Indianapolis Colts type of offense, or the greatest feel like the Kurt Warner led Rams teams, where they just did what they want. The Cardinals, they're not getting as good a running game the last couple of weeks, and they're facing two very good defensive teams. But you look at the game and said it wasn't a flawless game either. The Cardinals still really haven't put together a start to finish great game. Aside from bad teams,
about Chicago. Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, and even Chicago had hiccups. Yeah. I mean, San Francisco, that was a beatdown from start to finish. But San Fran's a mess. And so
yeah.
You almost discount a little bit because they're just a train wreck. So in terms of confidence moving forward, you at least I feel like this team, really the sky's the limit. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like they should win. I know they won't. I mean, if they do, wow. But I feel they should win every game that they play from here on out. And because how they came out these last 2 weeks in prime time, they sort of got the monkey off their back in terms of kind of overcoming Seattle. Yes, they beat them in 2013, but it said we got the whole notion that, well, Seattle's laying in wait, took care of them. They had a premier matchup, a big time matchup on national TV. They took care of business there and looked good doing it. And now You know, as I talked about, as we were entering this game, entering the Seattle game after during the bye, after the bye, is if they really, these four games, so they got two more, they took care of the two hardest parts, the next two games, they could take care of it. You know, it, even though it's not quite mathematically, they will mathematically eliminate the Rams, I believe, if they win their next two games, and including beating the Rams. And, you know, even if Seattle keeps pace, they're looking at a three-game deficit with four games left, and you just can't overcome that. And then, like I said, they're playing for seeding. They really took care of business. They took care of business in the two hardest games of the four-game stretch. And then after these next two games, they got 3-4 at home. Just the way when you close the season, you'll be playing... I mean, you're playing teams who were expected to be in the playoff race. You got Minnesota, who's in the mix. You've got Philadelphia, who, well, because they're in the NFC East, are still in the mix. You've got Green Bay at home, and then you've got Seattle at home. And so you have a situation where you're confidently in the postseason and really tuning yourself up to make a run.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, as you talk about seeding, is going to be where they're at going into that Green Bay game, because that's week 16, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that's game 15, week 16, and that could be for the two seed. I don't see either the Cardinals or Green Bay catching Carolina.
Nah.
Only because Carolina's schedule is really soft. I'm not saying Carolina's a better team.
Well, it's because it's so deep in the
away
season.
From Carolina. Yeah. Yeah, two games, I mean, that's kind of what you talked about with Seattle. Like, three games is a lot. Like, that would be devastating, right, if week 17 was for the division. So, you know, I texted with some buddies about this today, actually, and we were talking about what's acceptable or expected this year now. And I said the only thing acceptable, really, and maybe this is, you know, too high of praise, but I think they've shown this, is 13-3. Like, one hiccup, maybe a loss to Green Bay or Seattle in the final 2 weeks, but that's really it, right? Like, if this team doesn't finish better than 12-4, then there's going to be a lot of questions, right, going into the playoffs. Like, what happened? You know, because as you said, even though Minnesota's not bad, you know, in Seattle, or excuse me, San Francisco and St. Louis are, you know, away games. They're both kind of dumpster fires right now. So, you know, and Philly too. I mean, they're a dumpster fire, but it's in Philly and it could be snow. So, you know, but even then, like, you see no reason that going into week 16 that the Cardinals shouldn't be, you know, 12-2 going into Green Bay and Seattle. And if they're 12-2, then there's really no reason they shouldn't finish at least 13-3. So I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
I see, you know, the Minnesota game, to be honest, is the one that worries me the most on two levels. One short week, and not only that, but it's a short week after having been on the road in St. Louis against a team who really beats up on the Cardinals. That's I don't see the Cardinals losing that game. They have a lot to prove. They have a bitter taste in their mouth against that loss at home. That and their, you know, it's Case Keenum. So I mean, come on, it's Case Keenum. I'd actually be a little bit more worried for Nick Foles, because Nick Foles plays really well against the Cardinals. He's put up three really good games against them in his career. But that Minnesota game, even though it's at home, Minnesota's physical. Arizona will be coming off a physical game on the road on a short week. So that game worries me a little bit. the Philly game, yes, with the, you never know with this sort of team, with the Cardinals, how they're going to react to a super cold weather play. It's not so much Carson, because Carson's done that, you know, Cincinnati and all. It's been a little while, but he's done that.
Honestly, the only thing I'm worried about in Philly is the weather, like, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
Like, the team itself doesn't worry me anymore, because it sounds like after Adam Schefter reported today that the team's kind of given up on Chitelli.
Ooh.
Like the players themselves. So, and it sounds like it's a mutual parting that's about to happen after the season. So that'll be interesting. But so I think, you know, we'd both be disappointed with a loss there on a team that might be unraveling. But like you said, they could still be in playoff contention, because the NFC East is really, really bad.
Well, I want to see at least... I want them to be in a situation where after having beaten Green Bay, they enter Week 17 at least 12-3, but already have the 2 seed locked up. And that way, Week 17, pretty much, hey, throw Matt Barkley out there. Give him a look. Actually, it would be sweet if Seattle is in playoff contention. Yeah. Okay, never mind. I'd like to see Carson Palmer and the whole group bang out there to just squash them out of the playoffs. Now, I don't know what that's going to look for them, because right now they're not really in the, they're kind of in the mix. But... you know, with both Tampa Bay and still ahead of them, even behind at Tampa Bay, I think is ahead of Seattle right now in terms of the non-playoff contenders. I think they're tied in by record wise, but I think Tampa has they have the edge. I might be wrong, but my goodness, I want to, you know, 12 games I think is the bare minimum at this point. After the role they've been on, provided they stay healthy, I mean, especially Carson Palmer, you like their chances going forward, and it would be collapsible, you know, sort of a collapse to see anything like you said.
Yeah, and just to your point, Tampa is the 7th seed, so they're the 1 game out of playoff spots. But the thing that's going to be hard about that is that Tampa and Atlanta, I still think, have 2 games against each other. So both those teams are going to kind of mutilate each other. So you're going to end up having just, you know, you're probably going to end up with Seattle right there at the end. And they may even be locked in like the bye by that time. So who knows what happens. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, confidence going forward, it should be an absolutely anything under the 2 seed, I think we have to. I mean, again, depending on what Green Bay does, but I think we'd have to be semi-disappointed.
Well, yeah, because Green Bay has looked beatable. And yes, they sort of got better against Minnesota, but, you know, Arizona's offense is going to wear them down. Even if they – and Arizona's defense is good enough to hold the Packers some. Well, not completely. I mean – You look at the Seattle. Seattle's put up some good numbers this season offensively in several games, and the Cardinals, you know, gave up 32. They gave up 31 to the Bengals. So they can get scored upon, but the thing is they have to keep pace with what the Cardinals are doing. I don't know if Green Bay can do that, especially against a pretty stout Cardinals defense overall. Let's look at the good and the bad in the win. Start with the good. There's lots of good. Obviously, you look at the good part and you see 4 touchdown passes. Carson Palmer, after overcoming the 2 early interceptions, which were just, what in the world was he thinking? It was 2013, first half of the season, Carson, where he was trying to force the ball to Fitz on the one throw, and that was just an inexplicable throw. Why in the world would you do that? And then the other one, and Bruce Arians joked about it, saying he kind of blames himself a little bit, because he told Carson to make sure that Nelson, you know, when you see that route that they hits the middle, that hits the seam, that he's in the middle of the field. But I didn't tell him to throw it, but he saw something different. Carson said as he was throwing, he wanted to take the ball down. It was already too late. It was just trying to make something happen that wasn't really there. And that's been Carson. Carson's done that his whole career. But then after that, he was so locked in. The play calling is, and this is another talk about this. Some of the play calling was just dynamically good and provided results that they're executed. But Carson Palmer, after those two interceptions, whew, he was locked in. And my goodness, he showed that he is, like, right now, statistically, the best quarterback in the NFL today.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you look at it, they're playing at a different level when it comes to things. Because, like, look at the Fells touchdown. Probably not the best decision, right? But it was double coverage in kind of a bad angle window. But it was like, all right, well, he's 6'7". And those guys, I think the tallest guy on him was like 6'1". So it's like, well, I'll take my chance, and if it doesn't work out, oh well. You know, we'll kick the field goal. And that's probably not a great decision to make, but when you're, you know, cooking, as they like to say, like Palmer has been, you get away with that stuff.
Well,
we see with Brady oh goodness, Aaron Rodgers all the time, and that's what happens. Like when you're in a zone like that, you know. And yeah, I know Rodgers and Brady have been in that zone their entire careers, but when you're in a zone like that, typically even you're like, all right, what did you see to make you want to throw a jump ball? Because I think it was 3rd and 1, right?
And, yeah, it was. It was a play action, and it was a home run ball. But the thing is, you see like that, he's in that zone. You look at the ball placement, he couldn't have put that ball in a better place.
No, and that's what I'm saying. So that's like one of those things. You just you live with that throw, because that's why you live with the interceptions at this point. Because he's got to make those, he's got to try to make those throws in order to get those results, right? So, you know, if he doesn't throw those interceptions earlier, he probably's thinking about it more. But he was at the point where he was kind of like, F it, probably throwing two picks. Like, I'm gonna try to fit this ball into this window. And it worked. And I think that's what you have to live with, right? You're gonna live with JJ Nelson's covered by three guys. There's two safeties deep. I'm still gonna try to make this throw. And you're like, wait, what? Like, why would you try to make that throw? But then again, you know, same thing. You run a play-action pass, it kind of works. You got Darren Fells over two defensive backs. All right, let's see what happens. You know, it's 3rd and 1. Yeah, we probably would have got the first down on the check-down throw. Let's see what happens. And it worked. And so that's what I'm saying. You live with those throws at the end of the game, because then you get throws like that at the end of the game. You know, the John Brown touchdown was, you know, one of those throws where he fit it into a really tight window between, you know, the defender that was supposed to be getting depth, and then, you know, the corner that was beat. And all of that plays into the Carson Palmer, the bad and the good, and everything that we've talked about this year. He's got to feel like he can take those shots. And when he does make mistakes, he has to feel like nobody, you know, cares. And to be quite frank, I don't think Bruce Arians really cares. As long as they win in the end, I don't think he cares if he throws 4 interceptions. As long as he wins in the end because he made a throw like he did to Darren Fell, I think he's okay with that.
What I liked, I'd like to kind of point as good on some of the play calling. There was that J.J. Nelson touchdown, for me, was a thing of beauty because of the play design on that one. It was, now there was some questionable. There was the 3rd and 1. When they brought in the two backs, he had, I believe it was Andre Ellington and David Johnson. David Johnson was the up back, and he took the up back handoff and got absolutely stuffed. But then you see what you realize later in the game why they ran that play. It wasn't a great play call because, you know, there's the up-back handoff, unless you've got an absolute bruiser, isn't necessarily a good thing to run, especially, again, a very talented defensive line like Cincinnati. But that play set up the J.J. Nelson touchdown. When they faked the up-back handoff, Carson rolls and moves to his right, shifts the pocket over. It looked like he's going to have Fitz come around kind of on a wheel, kind of creep down the sideline, and then it gives you, he's got J.J. Nelson speeding down the, you know, diagonally down the field between two defenders. All he has to do is just loft it up over. Beautiful throw. He even, you know, J.J. had to wait up for a little bit, but it was over the top of the one defender and way off of the other one, who was, there was plenty of room and lots of space behind it. That play was beautiful because that short gain there, the third and one, when they used it up the middle there, was just a thing of beauty because it set up that touchdown.
Yeah, and then that's what you want to see. The other thing was, play calling was still fairly, I think they were close to that 60-40 split that you want to see from a Cardinals team. So that's, you know, that's something we talk about a lot. Even though we can tell, you know, I don't need Pro Football Focus to give me their grade to tell you that Mikey Potty is the best offensive lineman on this line, right? Like, I think we figured that out. He's not, you know, special by any means in pass protection, but, man, he's really the only guy that can run block consistently on that offensive line. So that was rough to watch. Geno Atkins was living in the backfield, but it didn't matter because Bruce was like, I've got this going. I got this, you know, we're rolling a little bit. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and it just continues to work. On the other side of the ball, defensively, I think you have to be happy finally seeing the team finish, right? Finish sacks, because Andy Dalton looked like Russell Wilson a couple times out there.
Oh my gosh, I was like, who is this kid? Why was he running option? Why he kept scrambling? Yeah, yes, he's able. I'm like, why? Stop it. Just stop. I don't want to see him scrambling and do the Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson big plays. But pass rush, they finished 4 sacks. You saw Marcus Golden, who was disruptive. You got Dwight Freeney show up with one of his spin moves, and Brodney Gunter with the sack, and then Dan Buchanan got credit for one as well. They had some pressure in some of it, and it wasn't all good pressure, obviously, because Dalton's good. Dalton's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's very good. But the pressure, until he actually gets hit, doesn't really faze him.
Yeah, and that's what mattered in this game. You know, people know of my take on the pressure thing and like how it only matters if it results in a you know, a negative play on the other side of the, you know, coin. So if you get a pressure, you know, interception, then that pressure mattered. Whereas like just a pressure that causes an incompletion is the same not getting a pressure getting an incompletion to me, so I don't like the stat personally. But what I do like is the fact that, like you said, they finished. They turned those pressures into 4 sacks. You saw Marcus Golden finally, you know, I think that's only his second sack of the season, right? Like, I know PFF has him at, like, 4 or something crazy like that, but isn't that his only, like, second sack of the season?
Let me check, because I think he might have had like one. I think he might have had 1.5. So I think he's had a couple of half sacks, is what it was. So he's got one.
So,
oh no, he's just got 1.5 sacks on the year. Wait, that doesn't even make sense.
So I guess he only had a half a sack according to the NFL. So
yeah,
but yeah, I mean, he that play, and then there's a play later. Not that it really mattered, but there was a play later where he came off the edge and they ran just that quarterback draw up the middle, and he stopped Dalton. Like, there was nobody else that was going to stop him, and he stopped Dalton from behind. And that's something that you and I have talked about since they drafted him. It's not that he's not a good player. It's just that he's not a pass rusher, right? Like, and that's not a bad thing. You can have guys like Marcus Golden on your team because what he does is he provides secondary pass rush, he provides, you know, that hustle, and he's going to get cleanup sack. And you saw that he can, you know, win every once in a while in pass rush and make a big play, and he did that on the sack strip fumble. And you know, that was probably the biggest play maybe of the game. I don't know if it was completely the biggest play of the game, but maybe defensively, right? Cause they didn't cause any other turnovers, so.
Yeah, and now you have to like how Patrick Peterson played. That had to be another positive in that game because he really...
I just wasn't going to bring up Patrick because I don't know how healthy he is.
As the latest I heard is that Bruce Arians said on SiriusXM NFL Radio that Patrick is probably going to be good for San Francisco. Not that I'm too worried if he had to sit out this week. I mean, honestly.
Call them out.
But it looks like he'll probably be good to go. But he played a very good game. He got called for that early penalty. He allowed when he was targeted. According to Pro Football Focus, he only gave up 2 catches for 24 yards when targeted 6 times when they were throwing at A.J. Green at him. On the other side, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, he continued to show, and you saw a difference. Even though Justin Bethel did well, relatively well in his place, the defense looked different when Patrick was off the field. It wasn't, they couldn't quite get the stops.
No, and they can't blitz, right? So if they blitz, there's going to be a guy running free. Actually, there'll probably be 2 guys running free. So it makes a huge difference. What people don't understand, and we'll talk about it when we get to powers, but, man, what people don't get is the Cardinals ask so much of their cornerbacks. They ask them to stay on an island. And the Bengals... receiving core.
Very talented. Basically the Cardinals.
Yeah. And so, we're talking Cardinals with Floyd, who, you know, we can get back in a second when I explain why J.J. Nelson plays. But, you know, so they're going to have a guy open consistently because they have so much talent on their offense. Like, their offense is loaded with talent, literally everywhere. Like, they're so good. And so to see the defense and Peterson be able to, you know, for the most part, shut down Green, and Peterson did, but for the most part, the rest of the defense did as well. That was a huge deal. I think that just goes to show you that they are growing. But it the demands that they put on their corners so they can create pressure, because they do it backwards. Other teams use their defensive front to create pressure, and then, you know, use 7 guys drop back into coverage to make sure the wide receivers aren't open, where the Cardinals spend 5 or 6, what I think it's like 40%+ of the time, and so they only have 5 or 6 guys in coverage. So you end up, you know, setting yourself up to be beat a lot. And, you know, you see that, but this week you saw the other end of it where they finished the sacks and they were able to get the Bengals off the field in big situations. So, and then my last good thing, and there was a lot, so I don't want anybody to think that there's only 3 good things because there's so much. But Bruce Arians' offense, and this is something you and I have talked about ad nauseum, Bruce Arians' offense is basically wide receiver proof. In the fact that you only have to have a Larry Fitzgerald now or a Hines Ward then type of receiver as long as you have speed on the outside. Remember, Bruce Arians made Mike Wallace a star receiver. And then he got paid and he was awful, right?
Exactly.
So yes. For every Antonio Brown, you know, you end up with Mike Wallace. So you have to remember that when everybody was asking where's Jerron Brown to replace Michael Floyd, the only reason Jerron Brown replaced Michael Floyd last week was because J.J. was inactive.
And the reason why Jerron is active over Nelson is not because of his receiver play. It's because of his special teams play. He's very important on special teams. If you remember, if everyone can remember, early in the season, even dating back to the preseason, when Floyd was hurt, who was the number three receiver? It was J.J. Nelson, because he's fast and he's little, and that's what Bruce Arians wants. Yeah. And he's better than anyone thought he would be. He, you know, we've talked about that before. J.J. Nelson, he's far. He was just a kick returner. That's all he was.
Yeah.
He wasn't even a really dynamic receiver at UAB. But now he's making acrobatic catches. It's crazy that they've taken another basically unknown, just a small, skinny, fast guy, and turned him to what could be. They see something special in him. They see John Brown, but faster in him.
Yeah, and what people have to realize is, with Arians, all he needs is true vertical threat. And that's what he uses Michael Floyd for, right? Like, he doesn't use Michael Floyd like normal coaches would use Floyd. Like, most coaches would use Floyd as, like, a box-out, post-up type player because he's, what, 6'4", 230 pounds, and he runs a 4.4. And then they'd go deep. But Arians runs Floyd like he's, you know, 5'9 and 150 pounds, because that's what he likes. That's what he likes to be able to go vertical. And so instead of just having one guy go vertical, Floyd gives him the ability to have two guys go vertical. So when you talk about who's going to replace Floyd, or, you know, who fills in for Floyd, well, Nelson makes more sense because he does the same thing. He's just smaller. Like, that's the only difference.
So, B.A. was asked about the whole speed issue again. He says, I just like speed. I want speed all over the field. And he said, it's nice when it's 6'4", 220. And I think, you know, I've downplayed a little bit just how much they like Michael Floyd. I think Bruce Arians really likes Michael Floyd. The comment that he made on the Big Red Rage a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was on the radio, I don't remember which one, but he said the coaches love him. He said, I'm not worried about my role. The coaches love me. And maybe they do. Maybe they do keep him another year, because he gives them the speed that BA wants, but also in a really big target.
Yeah, it's just a different version of the same thing that BA likes. So, yeah, so that's what you want to see. And that's what, you know, and so JJ had his breakout game. It was great to see him succeed, because he's such a awesome guy and a great story on a program that, you know, folded under, and to see him succeed, I think that speaks a lot to what that program did before they did fold.
So let's move forward to, you know, we talked about the positive, that not everything was good. I mean, for one, in the first half, offensive line wasn't playing real well. Now, again, we need to focus on the fact that Cincinnati's defensive line is really talented, a very talented line. But they struggled. Geno Atkins was just everywhere. And, well, the offensive line without Mike Iupati in there for a little bit looked really different. And, you know, they're a capable line, but when you put Iupati in there, it just changes it just enough where the identity of the line is different.
Yeah, they're much more physical, right? Like, they're physical, but they're physical with a purpose. So, I think having to play both Larson and Watford hurt more than we expected.
It was like having, I think, Larson and Fanica, only a little bit better, maybe?
Yeah, and I think what it shows is that, you know, Arians is going to be fine. He's going to get his players out there. So it's not a huge deal, because everybody that he kept allows him to still run his offense. So, and that's all that really matters. But so, yeah, the offensive line was, I don't know, interesting to start the game. It got better, obviously, and it held up, and that's what really matters. I was going to go on the other side of the ball and just talk a little bit about, I think we have to, and I know it's weird because they're top five defense, and like yardage and stuff, but the all like has the Cardinals off or defense shut down a good offense yet? The question more should be how many good offenses have they actually played?
They played New Orleans and stopped them just enough. They played, you know, Seattle's a good offense. They stopped them just enough. Pittsburgh's a good offense. They stopped them until they stopped Michael Vick, but they couldn't stop Landry Jones, who ran an offense a little bit more like you would see Ben Roethlisberger do. And, you know, they've not been great against great offenses, but then again, great offenses tend to, you know, be great. So they've been just good enough, which is if you look at what Bruce Arians wants on a team, he wants a dynamic offense and a defense that takes the ball away. The defense is doing just enough their job, and let's say this. It's much better than the other way around.
and what you look at is the fact that they're able to get stops in big situations. What I think it comes down to for this team is that they have a couple things that can be exploited, and there are teams that can exploit them. Obviously, we saw the exploitation of Jerod Powers, but how many teams have, you know, three dynamic wide receivers, right? Like, you're not going to be super worried about Jerod Powers if you're playing the Carolina Panthers.
Right, because it's Ted Ginn. You know,
yeah, so... yeah. So, but maybe you are a little worried if you end up with a... I'm trying to think, like, going through all the rosters. Maybe a Tampa Bay. I know that sounds weird, but, you know, they have Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans, so maybe that could cause some issues.
Well, and Jerod Powers just isn't, you know, he's not Patrick Peterson. That's the thing. He's not Patrick Peterson. And outside of a guy like Patrick Peterson, Joel Revis, or even Richard Sherman, guess what? Cornerbacks get beat because that's how they get beat all the time. And it's simply because that's how the league is set up. And so when have a guy who can stop receivers, that's why he's so valuable. Jerod Powers plays really well. He's not Patrick Peterson all the time, and he does get beat, though. And when he does get beat, he does get beat noticeably at times. But, you know, I'll keep saying this, guys. For all you Cardinals fans who think they need a better option, put Bethel on the side, I'll tell you this. Jerod Powers is better than Justin Bethel. There's a reason why Bethel's not playing that position. Powers is better. Bethel might have more upside.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He's going to blow more assignments.
Well, and Bethel got torched on a couple plays, but bad throws.
He should have helped him. Oh, my gosh. He should have inserted that pass, and it never should have been even. It never should have even mattered. The ball just hit him in the hands. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, he turned around a little bit late, That almost touchdown was because he tipped the ball up in the air so AJ could catch it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is that we've talked about it since he was drafted, but Kevin Minter being on the field in coverage is not ideal. I think it was six catches for like 96 yards or something he gave up.
Yeah. The other time he was targeted when it was incompletion, Geo dropped.
Yeah. And so, you know, but again, how many teams can take advantage of that? And so when you nitpick through this stuff, you keep it in the back of your mind for like, okay, when we see Green Bay, if Davante Adams figures out how to catch the ball ever, and then, and Randall Cobb's healthy and Eddie Lacy stops eating cheeseburgers, you know, maybe then, you know, you're concerned, but not completely. Obviously, the AFC is a whole different animal, but the Cardinals have showed they can beat the number two seed in the AFC. So it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world that you have these problems. It's just something that you keep in mind for later on and go, okay, if they were to come up against a team again like Cincinnati, you know what matchups can be exploited, and so you hope that those, you know, do not get over, you know, overwhelm the whole team. But other than that, like I said, like Dolphins are flying for, what was it, about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then the fact that the Cardinals don't have the secondary defensive players in Powers and Minter who keep up with secondary options that are as good as Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Gio Bernard.
Well, and it wasn't just that. It wasn't just that, because it wasn't just losing Peterson out there, but they lost Frosty Rucker, so they had almost completely, they almost had to completely abandon any base where they had three down linemen. So they're almost going with just two down linemen for almost the entire second half, because when Frosty went out. And Frosty's a big, big part of that defensive line success they have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, again, it's just stuff that you keep in the back of your mind. But you hate to nitpick too much when you win a game against a team that's, you know, 8-1.
Let's talk about the rookies, because the rookies three rookies got game balls. Four rookies contributed heavily in that game. So Rodney Gunter got a game ball for his sack. Marcus Golden got a game ball. J.J. Nelson got a game ball. And David Johnson caught another touchdown pass. Mr. Touchdown. So, and it's coming at a crucial time. You know, Bruce Arians made the comment again, something that he's not afraid to play rookies. He just doesn't like to do it. He'll do it if he has to, but he still kind of has the same mentality that Ken Whisenhunt had before him, is, you know, you prepare the rookies so that they're ready by Thanksgiving or ready by November. Now, we're now at the end of November. The depth is being tested, because you've got guys like Frosty Rucker's hurt, Michael Floyd who's hurt, Jonathan Cooper. So you're starting to have the bang, you know, the injuries and the toll of the length and the physicality of the NFL season. And now these rookies get a chance. Marcus Golden and Rodney Gunter have gotten a significant role early on, and it's showing now. David Johnson as well. J.J. Nelson flashed a little bit early on, then got hurt. But, you know, this is the sort of thing. It kind of shows you, hey, solid. It's not necessarily special. There's some potential there. Gunter could be special. He's got a lot of potential there. Golden will be solid. J.J. Nelson, if he contributes what he does, you know, like he did on Sunday, once every five games, that's more than you can ever expect from a fifth-round pick out of a tiny school and a tiny frame. So you're seeing the quality of the Steve Keim drafts in the back end.
Yeah, and, you know, you're still obviously outside of Golden, you're still waiting for consistent, you know, contributions, but I think you have to be happy with the fact that you don't need them. So it doesn't really matter, right? Like, if they needed those contributions and then they weren't getting them or couldn't get them, that would be worse than the fact that they don't really need those guys to contribute, but then when they're called on, they're able to contribute. So, I don't know, it's like one of those interesting, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't type things, because they're not necessarily needed, but, you know, they are, when they are needed, they're successful. So you have to just be excited about that fact that even in very limited work, they're able to go out there and play well and have a positive impact on the game.
You'll be interested in this, because Marcus Golden gets a lot of love from Pro Football Focus. There was a tweet, a stat that came out that among the, you know, 3-4 outside linebackers, he's like the only one who grades above a 71 in all three phases, against the run, in pass rushing, and in coverage. He consistently gets that sort of the love that Pure Football Focus has. He's like the only one who's played in X amount of things who still doesn't have a missed tackle. He's a very solid player who's not special in any particular phase, but does contributing a valid contributor that any team would have. It's really interesting to see how much positive press that the Pro Football Focus gives him.
Well, there's two things to that, right? So, one, he has played well, so don't think. But two, they had him rated as their second highest edge player in the draft, right?
That so must mean that the draft was bad. But
when they did their, you know, Pro Football Focus goes to college thing, and so he was their second highest rated edge player coming out. So there is incentive to ensure that those grades look good continuing forward. And then we also have to remember we're talking about the people that said that Chris Johnson is the worst running back in the NFL. So, right, I'm cool with all the good and the bad that comes from PFF because I think they're phenomenal. I think they do a lot of great work. I know personally multiple people that work for them, so I know that they have good people in position, right? So, you know, I take shots at their grades because they're so arbitrary and so silly to me sometimes, or I should say sometimes, most of the time. But when you look at Marcus and what he's done this year, I think you just have to look at it and say he's exactly what we thought he could be, but he's already there. So maybe then the thing is he's got a higher ceiling, right? So maybe his ceiling's a little higher. Because this is where I thought he could get to, where he could be, what's the guy I'm trying to think of? Paul Kruger,
yes.
Right? Paul Kruger in Baltimore, or Pernell McPhee in Baltimore, guys that the Cardinals were very interested in. So the fact that Golden is in their same, you know, body, athleticism type thing makes sense. So maybe that's where he's already there. I don't know if he's as good as Pernell McPhee already, but maybe he's closer to Pernell already than I thought he was. So I think that's what you have to look at is, okay, is he a guy that you're going to pay $9 million a year to?
Ooh, not right now.
Probably not, right? But they were going to pay $8 million to Pernell McPhee. I think that was the offer. I think it was something like
432. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and he's maybe five stacks off, you know, where he needs to be to get that money, but he's right there. So it's a really interesting thing because he's, like you said, he's really solid. He's a good player in a lot of different areas, but he's not spectacular in anything other than the fact that he's never going to give up on a play. So, like, you know, that thing that we joked about with the motor thing, like, at the beginning of the year, it's really odd to see because you see other guys gassed, and somehow he's still got some juice left.
Yeah, yeah. He's a guy who always seems to be around the ball. Even if he doesn't make any play, he's there. He's somewhere around. It's kind of type of player like we've talked about Jonathan Cooper. He's moving around. He's running around like a wild man, getting to the second level, but he's not, you know, hitting anybody. Marcus Golden, even when he's not making plays, showing up there. Josh Morrow is kind of the same thing. Very high motor players. Only he's getting to making four more plays, but because he plays with such intensity, you notice it even when the stats aren't backing up his play.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, I always joke around with Cardinals fans, right? Like, so I had a Cardinals fan tweet at me today with the Golden thing, because I think that was last week before the Bengals game that
the 71 thing, yeah.
I think that was last week, and somebody tweeted at me, like, oh, do you still not think he's, you know, worth that second-round pick? And I was very careful never to say that he was not worth that second-round pick. I was very careful not to say that ever. But I did say, so you agree that Chris Johnson is the worst running back in the NFL? And they said no. I said, okay, well then, why is it okay to like these grades when they are for your team, but not like the grades when they're against your team, right? Like that's what is interesting to me about fandom in general. If something good is said about your team, then this is the greatest site ever. They're never wrong. And in your face, Seth, you're an idiot, right? But when they come back and say, well, but Chris Johnson is the worst running back, starting running back in the NFL. Well, this site is stupid. I'm not gonna listen to these guys, right? So, you know, we have to pick and choose. So that's why it's just easier if I do it myself than let Pro Football Focus tell me something. But I agree, like, he's looked very good this year.
Is there any other part of the game that you wanted to bring up?
The game itself, I think we need to passingly mention special teams play with Saleh again.
Oh, yes. Drew Butler didn't suck for the second week in a row.
Yeah, and I think I figured out the whole thing. So I went back and read. I didn't want to watch him punting. Okay, Zastel. No offense, Zastel. You're a great guy, but I didn't want to watch him punt from 2013. But I went back and like was paying attention to like Zastel, right? And his punts were not necessarily longer, that much longer, but they were right around the same hang time. And so when you look at Butler last year, I think the thing that hurt him the most was his lack of hang time. So I feel like that's something that was coached up to him by and preached to him by Bruce Arians, and I don't even know who their special team coach is right now.
Amos Jones.
Okay. Why is Kevin Spencer was the last one, right?
Yes, he was with Wiz.
Okay, why do I remember that name?
You know why? Because Kevin Spencer would be on the radio every week in the morning with Doug and Wolf, a special teams coordinator. Yeah, the special teams coach was a weekly interview guest on a radio.
So they would, Jones and Arians supposed to preach up to him the importance of hang time and just saying, look, you don't have to really kick the ball that far. Just hang it up in the air long enough for Justin Bethel to be down there. Because if he's down there, he's going to make a play. And that's basically what it is.
Yeah, it is. So if Justin Bethel doesn't make a tackle, he gets blocked in the back. Which, you know.
Yeah.
That's the same thing as a tackle, even better.
Yeah, exactly. So I think just from that game, you want to hit on that, too. It's just that the special teams continue to be solid. And as New England has showed in all of their Super Bowl wins, you have to have special teams.
And Catman gets his first game winner. There was a topic I wanted to bring up rather briefly because it's like a cockroach. It keeps popping up because can't get rid of it. And that's Darrell Washington. The Darrell Washington, like Roger Goodell was on the radio the other day with Doug and Wolf on a local radio show. They asked him about Darrell. Commissioner Goodell said he's aware of his unchanged status and that it sounds like he's never even seen. So this is what I got from it, because the professionals haven't even gotten it to Goodell. He's obviously not ready. That tells me, okay, Washington applied for reinstatement. He didn't even get past the initial protocol to get that to the commissioner. Or he was going to, or maybe Washington's full of crap. Then Jay Glazer on some pregame show said that, if I guess the topic was as enough to talk about it with the Cardinals, is that Washington, while suspended, has had multiple violations of the substance abuse policy. Ian Rappaport, unless he was citing previous information that was called sort of note, said again it is an issue with mostly missed tests. And the one thing I wrote about it today, it brought up the whole societal thing about marijuana. It's tit for tat. I don't care about that part. That's for another forum, another discussion about what what the league should and could be testing for, penalizing for. The fact of the matter is, Darrell Washington just, I guess he doesn't care about football that much.
No, and he got paid, right?
So he did. And the Cardinals, you know, Mike Jarecki reported that the Cardinals are going after that bonus money. And that's information right now is enough to know he's never playing for the Cardinals again, and as soon as they get the money back, they're getting him off their roster. They're cutting him. But
yeah,
my goodness, for all the people out there, all the fans out there at this point, and I didn't bring it up in the article, of how much better the Cardinals' defense could be with Darrell Washington, I'm going to ask you this. How much better is he than De'Ongi Buchanan right now? Because it's not that much better if he is at all. Buchanan's playing at a really high level at that same position. And he's the guy who would be taken off the field if Washington were here. So that's the question. Like, what do you think? How much better do you think Washington is than Buchanan right now?
Well, and the thing is, it's not even how much better. The thing is, we don't know what Buchanan's growth trajectory would be if Washington was playing. Because what ended up happening is Buchanan's gotten to not have to play safety, right? And when he was drafted, that was the one thing that I said, was that I don't know if he can cover with safety. So the fact that he just gets to play inside linebacker is probably better for him, right? Like, not a dig at the guy, because he's playing out of his mind, but he's probably a better inside linebacker right now and in the future than he is a safety, and that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And so when you look at it, the question then becomes, right, if you put Washington back on there, does is Buchanan's trajectory the same as a safety? Is he able to beat out Tony Jefferson or Rashad Johnson and stay on the field? And while it hasn't been enough time to see, the evidence would be no right now because he's not great coverage. So maybe the only benefit to having Washington back, and I say maybe because the year that Washington was here with Carlos Dansby, the best inside linebacker tandem that they've had, that's when they got torched by all those tight ends. So let's not act like Darrell Washington coming back and De'Ron Buchanan being here, all of a sudden, like, everything's fixed, right? So
because there's really not much to fix right now, to be honest, between what they're doing.
And that's the thing. That's what people gotta understand is, right, like, Washington picked what he loves. You can't fault a guy for that. Like, if a guy doesn't love football, you can't make him come out here and be a football player. So there's nothing,
your team's money.
But that's his thing, Jeff. And I get why the Cardinals are upset. And I get why fans are upset. I do. I really do. But let's be honest. If your school district offered you $10 million and said, here's $10 million, now you're not allowed to do anything that you enjoy doing, though, so don't do it. He's like, well, what's the catch? Like, do I have to give it back if I'm bad or if I do stuff that I'm not supposed to? No, you'll still get to keep the money.
Oh.
Okay, so then what's my incentive? Like, I just got $10 million. What's my incentive? Right? And so, let's be honest, most of us would probably do what we wanted to do, too. And he chose. Like, you can be upset that the Cardinals were duped, you know, or whatever.
We talked about it on one of our previous shows before episode 100. I don't know if anyone else caught that earlier that I said, but yes, this is our 100th episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. Is I planted the question. Would the Cardinals have been better off cutting him and just paying Carlos Dansby? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, and we talked, like you said, we talked about that before. And I think both of us said the same thing. Yeah, like, it wasn't even like, I don't think it was the weed thing that bothered us as much as the domestic violence.
Well, that he was already unreliable, he had this pending domestic violence thing, and he's already in the program, so he's already unreliable. It's like, let's go with the sure thing. Let's go with Dansby, especially when the team that, you know, it was it's a veteran-laden team. They're looking to... Now, again, you know, Dansby's still around. What's Dale Buchanan doing? This is the same question. So it's really sort of worked out just fine.
Yeah, and, you know, and so here's what I'll say, right? Until an NFL executive or, you know, a reporter or the Cardinals say something, take everything you hear with a grain of salt. And so this isn't a shot at Jake Glazer, because he's incredible at his job. He works his butt off. He's a great, you know, insider. This isn't a shot at Ian Rappaport. This isn't a shot at Mike Jarecki. But the fact is, those guys get used all the time. Like, all the time. And half of their, like, source info vetting stuff is figuring out what is information that is actual information and what is information being fed to them in order to further somebody else's agenda, right? And
right.
So that's what people have to understand. So you look at this, you look at this information, and you say, okay, well, I think we already figured that, but that's good to know, and I'll just keep that in mind. But in the end, like, does it really matter? Honestly, like...
He's never playing for the Cardinals again. Everyone can lament that he's never coming back, and I don't know if he'll play in the NFL again.
And I don't think he wants to. That's the whole thing that people are missing. Like, if dude's missing drug tests, like it's being reported, then dude doesn't want to play in the NFL. And that's okay. That's his life. That's his decision to make. Like, if he doesn't want to be in the NFL, then that's on him. That's not anybody else's responsibility. That's just on him.
But yeah, that was enough talking about Darryl Washington. I hope I don't ever have to talk about him again, because it frustrates me how the what if this or what if that. Really, what if? You look at the games that he was here, you know, the years we was here. Did the Cardinals do anything? No, they didn't. They won five games. They won eight games. They won five games. And then they won 10 games, but didn't make the playoffs. He was fun to watch.
The thing is, he's a great player, and it's frustrating to see his talent wasted. But again, if a guy doesn't want to do something, even though he's great at it, we can't make him. That's the unfortunate reality. So, you know, it just sucks that it happens to be a player on the team that we are fans of.
Looking ahead to the San Francisco 49ers, is there anything of concern that we should look for? Or can we lick our chops at the fact that we're going to get to see Blaine Gabbert play for the 49ers, which is always a really good thing, even though they're playing better with Blaine Gabbert than they were playing with Colin Kaepernick. And that in itself is a strange thing. But I'm so excited to see the Cardinals go up against Blaine Gabbert, because it's Blaine Gabbert.
Well, it's not just that, right? Like, it's Sean Drone. I don't even know who that guy is, to be completely honest. He's played well, though, right? I mean, well-ish. And it's the corpse of Anquan Boldin, who's trying to hold his body together with duct tape now. It's just an interesting time for the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, let's just enjoy the Cardinals moments that we're having now, because that's how fast it goes downhill, right? 2 years ago, their Richard Sherman batted pass away from being in the Super Bowl for the second time. And now they're one of the laughing stocks of the NFL. So life comes at you fast.
Hey, that sounds like a Geico commercial. But that'll wrap it up for episode number 100 of Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thanks for if you've been with us for all 100 episodes, I applaud you personally. We've had some good ones. We've had some, you know, rough ones, and had some great interviews. But I hope you're back next week. I do not have planned right now, especially with the holidays, of having a preview podcast with Niners Nation, just simply because, you know, we'll be busy eating turkey and buying crap from stores, paying a little bit of money for things we probably didn't really need or should have gotten anyway. But so we will be back here again in a week for our All Cardinals show to talk about what will hopefully be a dismantling of the 49ers for a second time. And on behalf of everyone at Revenge of the Birds, thank you for listening. You can find us with lots of different ways. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, just RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Coming soon, Google Play Podcasts. I'm Jess Ruth. That's Seth Cox. Everybody, thanks for listening. Have a great night.
Talk about it, everyone.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.